On today's show, Darius Garland showed out against Memphis, and there was a bit of a kerfuffle at Rockets Morgan Fieldhouse. We'll talk all about that on this new episode of Locked On Cavs.
You are Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast.
All right, the music you heard on the way in is from our friends at Astor Radio. Check them out on Apple Music or Spotify. Today's episode is brought to you by LinkedIn. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the qualified candidates you want to talk to faster. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/lockedonNBA. I'm Chris Manning, covering the Cavs and NBA at large for places like Diamond Up Rocks and SB Nation's Fear the Sort and the Just Basketball Show. That man over there is Evan Damrell, the proprietor of Write Down Euclid. We have a jam-packed lockdown cast for you on this Friday, February 4th. Cavs beat the Grizzlies 128-113. Donovan Mitchell was ejected from this game after Dylan Brooks hit him below the belt, and then Dylan Brooks was called for flagrant 2. Donovan Mitchell threw the ball at him, and there was a little bit of a massing, let's say, not quite a fight, but some tensions, some tempers were raised there, and then they both get ejected. The Cavs end up winning. We're going to talk about Darius Garland not making the All-Star team, as well as Jared Allen and as well as Evan Mobley. And we're going to discuss the Cam Reddish latest. Just his name has been linked to the Cavs out there a little bit again. So again, a lot going on today. Evan, this was a long, busy Cavs night. I want to start, though, with Darius Garland, who was the best player on the floor for either team. The orchestrator of everything Cavs in, who straight up outplayed John Morant in this game.
Yeah, he outplayed John Morant wire to wire in this one. It's a little funny, a little Akko taco, but friend of the program, Danny Cunningham, actually broke it to Darius. He didn't make the All-Star game.
I'm calling cap on that.
Okay, but because J.B. Bickerstaff did say post-game that maybe this was a little bit of added motivation for Darius just because he was not named an All-Star reserve, Ja Morant was. I wouldn't say there's like bad blood just because Darius Garland seems like a nice enough guy, and that's just kind of how the NBA is these days. Like, there's not like legitimate beef. I mean, maybe Dylan Brooks and Donovan Mitchell, which we'll touch on in a bit, but between like Ja and Darius, I don't think there's like some heated rivalry between the two. I just think maybe Darius probably did play a little bit of an edge tonight just because he wasn't named an All-Star reserve. The reality situation is it's really tough just at the end of the day. Like, Jimmy Butler didn't get in, James Harden didn't get in, Jalen Brunson, you can make an argument for it, didn't get in as well. Like, it's hard, but Darius Garland just came out and played really well. I think more than anything, like, this was a really good response on his part to just how things went against Miami the other night. Like, I'm trying to see his game by game, I'm just going to pull up his stats from against the Heat the other night. He had 16 points, 5 assists, 3 turnovers, 5 fouls, just plus 6 on the floor. Like, he was just very not effective. Like, the Heat did a very good job making Garland uncomfortable when, like, Garland came out and he was hyper efficient from 3-point range. He was getting everybody involved in the offense. I think after the dust up between Donovan Mitchell and Dylan Brooks, it kind of definitely changed the flow and the pace of this game considerably until the Cavs bench unit kind of stepped up like it did. But up until that, like, catalyst point between Mitchell and Brooks, Garland was just orchestrating his offense really well, whereas Ja was doing Ja Morant things. Like, his vertical was crazy. Like, it is quite the spectacle to see him in person. And like, I can understand the hype and the appeal with him too. Yeah, this was more of like a statement game for Darius Garland. I don't know if there was added motivation. It doesn't seem like it'd be that way, but I don't know. It was a fun game. Like, if you're just looking at it just for like an individual battle between him and Morant, like, that would be a fun best of seven series. Or like, my takeaway from this one is when the NBA inevitably expands, I really hope they bring Memphis over to the Eastern Conference, and more so they put them in the Central Division, just because I'd love to watch 4 games minimum of Cavs Grizzlies, because up until the kerfuffle and kind of just things that happened at the end last time when Cleveland was in Memphis a couple weeks ago, like, these are two very entertaining basketball games between these two teams. And like, obviously they're 1-1 against one another, but like, I'd like to see more of it selfishly at the end of
But just to turn this back to Darius Garland, Evan, like 30 points for him, 32 points, excuse me, the 11 assists, utter control of the game. This was a night where Donovan Mitchell didn't play well. 2 of 11 from the field for Mitchell, 3 assists, did make a 2-point field goal. Garland had to be the guy, and he absolutely stepped up and did it. He did not make the All-Star team. We'll talk about that later. But Darius Garland is an All-Star level player. There is no doubt about the fact that this guy is at that level. And look, and on top of just him stepping in with because of what happened with Mitchell, he just straight up outplayed Ja Morant. Okay, Ja Morant had a 25-point night, made the circus shot, all that stuff. Darius was straight up better than him. The Cavs like really went at Ja defensively and tried to attack him. That didn't really happen with Darius on the other end. Darius was the best player on the floor in this game, and that is why the Cavs, more than anything else, there's a lot of other positives. That is why the Cavs win this game.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Like, Darius was the catalyst in this one. I think you can give a lot of credit as well to Evan Mobley having a really, really great game, too. Jared Allen was super dynamic on both ends of the floor. Like, he had a really good two-way sequence that was a play of the night candidate for me at the end of the day. But, yeah, Darius Garland just was the offensive engine for Cleveland. Like, you saw, I don't want to say a throwback necessarily, but Darius definitely put the team on his back similarly to like he would last year, just because Donovan Mitchell just didn't have it tonight. Like you said, he was 2 of 11 up until he got ejected, 2 of 4 from 3-point range, and like just wildly inefficient across the board. And like Garland just kind of put the team on his back offensively and willed them to the end. And I mean, the bench as well stepped up, but like it was a lot of just Garland just doing Darius Garland things tonight.
So to move on to the big issue of this game, Dylan Brooks, after missing a shot, is on the ground. Donovan Mitchell's near him. He strikes Donovan Mitchell below the belt. Donovan Mitchell throws the ball at him in retaliation. They have to be separated. After a lengthy review, Brooks is ejected for a flagrant 2. Mitchell is ejected for throwing the ball at Brooks. No other penalties on either side. Evan, this felt like it raised the intensity of the game. And we'll start there before we get into kind of what Mitchell had to say about this after the fact.
Yeah, I definitely say the Donovan Mitchell, Dylan Brooks dust up. It was a lot of chaos just because from our vantage point in the press box, at least, it was hard to like get full perspective of what exactly happened. Like, we had to watch the replay on the TNT feed just because we had the availability to watch that. And just like the clip was all over Reddit and social media, like the moment it happened too. So like it was hard not to find it at that point, but it was quite the dust up because you saw Mitchell just jump right up and get in Brooks's face after he threw the ball at him. Like you said, it was a bit of a catalyst. And I think like we were talking about statistics after the fact as we were preparing to record this show, and Chris had mentioned to me just how the Cavs shot really well from 3-point range in this game. I'm like, did they actually? Because it just feels like a bit like this game was a bit of a blur after that dust up happened, because it just kind of became the overarching theme that is blanketing this entire situation, or just this game in general, because this is a really good win for the Cavs. Like, they really just dominated the Grizzlies from wire to wire. Like, there was times Memphis made it a little dicey in the third, but like Cleveland did a really good job asserting their will on the Grizzlies. And I just think this Donovan Mitchell dust up is obviously going to branch over it. And then what Mitchell had to say post game, one, was surprising. I didn't expect him to come to the podium and speak directly to the media and to the cameras like he did, but he left it all out there. He made it very clear he's frustrated with how Dylan Brooks is playing anyone this season across the league, him included. He's had a history with Dylan Brooks too. Like, I saw a Jazz beat writer share a clip of how, I think it was during the playoffs, or maybe even it was during the playoffs or just whenever he was with the Jazz or something. But like Donovan Mitchell like patted Brooks on the head after like, and like it was like an attaboy sequence. Like they have some type of history with one another that I don't really know the depth of up until this point, but it definitely set the tone and changed things. And I think also credit where credit's due to the Cavs to kind of keep their disposition and not let things get out of hand. Like, there was this moment where maybe it was going to be Desmond Bane versus Jetty Osmond just because those two were kind of getting chippy with one another, but the Cavs were able to kind of maintain their composure and maintain a little bit of this dominance they had going over the Grizzlies, because this is a Memphis squad that is a little banged up. They had no Jaren Jackson Jr., Steven Adams in this one, and They are coming off the second game of back-to-back where they played the Portland Trailblazers really hard the night prior. And so if you're Cleveland, like, there's a lot of stuff falling in your favor, and it's a national TV game. Like, you didn't let this kind of just completely change the narrative and flip the script and, like, let the Grizzlies climb back into this one and then pull one over on you just because they were able to get under your skin, or at least not they, but Dylan Brooks was able to get under your skin so much that it just completely threw you off course.
Let's just not, like, beat around the bush here. Donovan Mitchell went out of his way to talk about Dylan Brooks and be like, this guy's a dirty player. He did a dirty play. I've been beating. We can't use, because we're not a podcast that uses swear words, we are not going to, we can't, like, play the clip, and we can't exactly say verbatim what Donovan Mitchell said about Dylan Brooks. But basically, he's like, I've been beating this guy up for years. I've been smoking him for years. I'm better than him. He did okay on me tonight, and he still resorted to deep to like a dirty play. And, like, everyone knows it. And he said, like, the league needs to do something about it. And it was very clear that this is a dirty player. This was a dirty play. And, like, went out of his way to come in and speak to as many cameras as possible to do this. This is, like, a very, like, Donovan Mitchell had, like, a point to say, like, about Dylan Brooks. And he unequivocally just came up and was like, this guy's dirty. He's not on my level.
Yeah.
This is beneath me. And it was kind of just like, wow. Like, I've not really seen a comment from a player like that to come in and just speak their truth in that kind of way about another guy like that.
Yeah, and more so it's Donovan Mitchell, who is a guy who does seem just overwhelmingly nice at the end of the day. Like, he seems friendly to everyone. I don't think he really has a lot of problems. But, like, Dylan Brooks is a guy he has history with, as I alluded to. Like, he also pointed out the fact that, like, Brooks started stuff with Dame Lillard, I believe, last night. And he started stuff with Steph Curry the other day. And then, obviously, there's the infamous Shannon Sharpe incident with the Lakers the other night because of LeBron and everything. Like, it's just Dylan Brooks is that guy who looks to start stuff with people. And what he did, obviously, is just, it's Bush League. Like, it's just an unspoken rule, clearly. Like, you should never punch somebody below the belt regardless of the situation, but especially, like, in a professional setting like that, because there's context and there's layers to it as well. Like, Donovan Mitchell's a guy who's dealing with a groin injury, and, like, he looked like he tweaked it earlier in the game when he had, like, a weird situation where he dove for the ball and kind of, like, slipped a little bit. And it was just tricky, and it was just a Bush League play by Dylan Brooks at the end of the day. I'm not trying to mince words either, but I just feel like what Donovan said speaks for itself. Like, he was less than thrilled, and he openly, not openly, but he implored the NBA to do something about it. And I do think it's funny that he did mention before he kind of opened up about his frustrations with Dylan Brooks and just what happened in this game in general, that he was ready to get fined. Like, he knew he was going to get fined for just criticizing how the league was handling the situation. But, you know, good on him, because this guy is a dirty player. This guy isn't Dylan Brooks. And I know, like, the Cavs can say, like, hey, we dug deep and we're dogs and everything else, but, like, it's not okay to hit somebody below the belt like that ever. Like, people had problems when Draymond Green did it multiple times, whether it was to LeBron or Steven Adams in the playoffs many moons ago, or one like Chris Paul just has, like, people call it inadvertent at times, but it's clear that Chris Paul sometimes has malicious intent when he's cocking back and punching somebody below the belt or just trying to be dirty like that. And I just think there's a certain level of decorum. It is a fraternity, it is a brotherhood, the NBA, and you don't want to treat each other like that, just because I don't think it's gonna be like a serious injury. Like, yes, there are ramifications for hitting a man in that location, of course, but it just, more than anything, it just gives you that reputation. And I think if you're Dylan Brooks now, like, people are gonna, like, come out and try to either, like, goad you into it, like, similarly like how it felt like LeBron was goading Draymond Green into it during the NBA finals at times, but also just, like, you're gonna have a target on your back. Like, a lot of teams don't like the Grizzlies because of how much trash they talk and how cocky they are at times, and how just, like, they're a young team that's just kind of, like, willing to come in and beat the crap out of you on any given night. Like, they already have a big enough target on their back at the end of the day. They finished second in the West last year, for God's sakes. And now you look at it, like, Dylan Brooks is just going to give them unnecessary attention. And Donovan Mitchell using his platform to publicly challenge the league about it and kind of just put everybody on notice, like, hey, a lot of people are fed up with this, isn't a great look if you're the Grizzlies at the end of the day.
Yeah. Also worth noting, like, that there's a very good J.B. Bickerstaff quote as well, where he basically was like, And again, he's sworn this. We can't say it, but he was like, we are not the team that starts things. We're the team that responds to them and upholds ourselves. And that was a big through line of the press result. We're going to go into break, though. We're going to come back, do our game awards. But first, got to tell you about our first sponsor of the day, LinkedIn. Today's episode is brought to you by LinkedIn. These days, every new potential hire can feel like a high-stakes wager for your small business. You want to be 100% certain you have access to the best qualified candidates available. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the right people for your team faster, free. All it takes is filling out the right information and clicking a few buttons, and you'll be searching for that next great team member. Then add the job and the purple hashtag hiring frame to your LinkedIn profile to spread the word that you're hiring. Simple tools like screening questions make it easy to focus on candidates with just the right skills and experience. You can quickly prioritize who you'd like to interview and hire. Finding the right team member is paramount to ending the year strong, and you need the right tools to do it. LinkedIn is that tool. This is why small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering quality hires versus leading competitors. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the qualified candidates you want to talk to faster. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/lockedonNBA. That's linkedin.com/lockedonNBA to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. Evan, let's go to awards. Who's your MVP?
Darius Garland. You can make a case for like Evan Mobley and just how dynamic he was on both ends of the floor and like how good he was still offensively. Like you saw like a consistent high motor from Evan Mobley from start to finish in this game for Cleveland, but it's Darius Garland. He was the orchestrator of this offense. He, like I said, you don't want to say it's like a vintage throwback, but it gave you glimpses of like the Darius last year where like the Cavs are saying like, okay, we need you to put the offense on your back today. And he more than stepped up to the task. And I think, again, really, really strong response just after kind of a pretty mediocre game against the Heat a couple nights prior.
It has to be Garland. Like, it is a good shout to mention Mobley and Allen just because, like, those two guys did go in and absolutely dominate with Steven Adams out and with Jaren Jackson Jr. out. Like, those two guys were not there to provide resistance. The Cavs absolutely kind of handled the front court of Aldama and Xavier Tillman and Brandon Clark. Like, they just kind of decimated those guys inside. That was a big reason why the Cavs were able to win, but it has to be Garland. This was his night. He's 4-6 from three. He was making pull-up jumpers. He was making ridiculous passes. They ran a nice little play for him where they used him as a screener, and he got a really nice floater out of it. Like, everything in this game was about Garland. He was the superstar. This was the all-star Garland that I think you're looking for. Evan, let's go to play of the night. I'm gonna go to one that's kind of off the beaten path a little bit. You could have picked a ton of Garland ones.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna just shout out this, and I have one in there. There's a lot of good Evan Mobley defensive stuff in this game, but I'm just gonna go on the fact that they used Isaac Okoro to post up Ja Morant in this game, and it worked. Like, the Cavs went out of their way to throw Isaac Okoro a post up against Ja and make him work defensively, and Okoro succeeded. Mm-hmm. Okoro has come a long way. They're actually trusting him to do things like that. They used him as a screener in this game as well. Like, they're doing stuff with him to really like empower him in offense in interesting ways. But the fact that they ran a post up for him and it worked and he got an opportunity against John Morant was just like one of those like, am I sure I'm seeing this? Am I sure this is actually happening in front of me moments? So I just wanted to give that a shout.
No, it's a good pick. It was creative for sure. I'd say that like it was a creative play on the Cavs part just to kind of get Isaac Okoro going. Like, I gave them a shout out at least on through the Twitterverse that especially in the second half he saw the Cavs getting him a lot of clean looks, him as an Isaac Okoro just on the interior, because the three-point shot wasn't falling for him tonight. I don't think he even attempted three-pointers off the top of my head. I don't have the stats in front of me directly, but yeah, Isaac, that was a very creative way to kind of use him and also kind of accentuate some of the passing you have other than from Garland on the roster too, because they try to run a similar play as well with Evan Mobley kind of being the initiator at the top of the key, and it didn't work because the Grizzlies read that pass that time. But like, you're like, oh, okay, at least they're trying something a little bit creative at times to kind of get a guy who's a bit of a non-shooter involved in the offense somehow. So my play of the pit night pick though was, I believe it was midway into the third quarter, I can't remember, but Jerry Allen had a very, very good block on either Brandon Clark or Xavier Tillman, but he had a block on one end, and then the Cavs broke out on the fast break and Allen just sprinted on the floor. Grabbed an offensive rebound and was able to put it back on a dunk. It's just like, that's really good two-way play from Jared Allen. Like, he was very impactful on both ends of the floor. Like, ditto for Evan Mobley, as we talked about in the MVP talk. But, like, it was just a really good play. And you could talk a lot about how all the crazy stuff Darius Garland did just to kind of keep the Cavs free-flowing and moving offensively. But, like, that was one of those moments where the Grizzlies kind of made it a little dicey. I think it was, like, moments after the Donovan Mitchell ejection, and maybe you could tell like the Grizzlies kind of smelled some blood in the water a little bit, but you saw Allen just kind of like impose his will on one end and then just make a very, very intelligent rebound and put back on the other. And like, that's just my play of the night.
All right, let's go to stat of the night. 40 minutes and 17 seconds, Evan. That is the amount of time the Cavs spent leading in this game.
Wow.
This was a bounce back, kind of mostly Cleveland heavy win. They obviously had dealt with some push, dealt with some moments from the Grizzlies of making this uncomfortable, but they really just kind of held court for much of this game, particularly in the second half. They kind of just pushed and pushed and pushed and largely held control this game. I think this was a really kind of important, impressive win in some ways after the loss to Miami last week. I think this is a win they kind of really needed. They were a team in need of a win like this. In need of a win in that kind of environment, with the crowd really into it, with the intensity ramped all the way up. That's just really positive from the Cavs. So I think that the amount of time they just spent in control of this game, look, Memphis on the second night of a back-to-back, all of that stuff, you can throw caveats in there if you want to. I just think winning a game like that and taking what's in front of you and kind of holding control over so much of that game was really impressive.
Yeah, that is super impressive. I think if you're listening closely, folks, you're going to go, wow, just because I didn't realize how much the Cavs just kind of dominated the Grizzlies at times. Like, they only outscored at one point in the third quarter, 33-32. But my stat of the night's a little broad, I guess I would say. But Darius Garland was responsible for 54 of Cleveland's 128 points in the entire game, just in this one. Like we talked about a lot in this episode so far, he was the offensive engine for Cleveland, especially when before Donovan Mitchell was tossed, but like Mitchell just didn't have it going. And like Garland was just so poised and just constantly being a dazzling player out there. And it's just like, okay, he's still got that juice in. I mean, like, he still can put the team on his back when he needs to. And he shared the other day he'd rather be more involved in the playmaking aspect than the scoring aspect. But he's able to kind of bring you a little bit of, and that's something the Cavs kind of really need, especially even if Donovan Mitchell isn't thrown out, like, his shot's just not falling. Like, you need some other guy to step up and as a primary ball handler. And like, yeah, Ricky Rubio did a great job off the bench too, but Darius looked really, really poised and composed tonight on offense and just clearly was a huge part of it.
All right, let's go into one more break, one more sponsor. Today's episode is brought to you by FanDuel. This year, the only app you need at your Super Bowl party is FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. We're really excited about our new sports betting partner for Locked On because they're the number one sportsbook in America, FanDuel. And if you're new to FanDuel, that's even better. They have so many great features that make betting on sports fun and easy. Download FanDuel now so you can bet Super Bowl 57 with a no-sweat first bet. You'll get up to $3,000 back in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. FanDuel lets you bet on everything from the money line to point spreads to who will score a touchdown in the Super Bowl. Right now, they have the Eagles as 1.5-point favorites. Travis Kelce is at -125 to score a touchdown. That is the best odds of any player in that game. The FanDuel Sportsbook app is safe, secure, and super easy to use. Best of all, you can get paid your winnings instantly. I love the FanDuel app. It's really easy to use. It has everything you're looking for in a sportsbook app. And if you're an NBA fan, and you probably are if you're listening to this podcast, they offer no sweat same game parlays for Thursday. On Thursdays for TNT Thursdays. So come back for that next week. So join FanDuel today at FanDuel.com/LockedOn to claim your no sweat first bet on Super Bowl 57. That's FanDuel.com/LockedOn. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NFL. All right, Evan, last segment. Let's go to All-Star stuff. Talk about Darius Garland. Mm-hmm. I think he's the big snub for me. If we're going to look at this, we're going to kind of analyze who should feel aggrieved, let's say. I think Garland's the one with the biggest reason to feel aggrieved. I think, you know, compare him to Jrue Holiday. You know, James Harden didn't make it either, and there's other guards deserving in the East. But I think of these guys, it has to be Garland. He's putting up basically the same numbers he did last year. is had like a really good, I think, last several weeks and has played at a really, really high level. He's been, I think, just awesome. And this is the kind of game where you're like, oh yeah, Darius Garland can do this kind of stuff. The advanced numbers like him, the counting stats like him. There's not a not to like about his case. You just feel like this is a very competitive group. Yeah, but I think he had the best case of the guy. So if there's anyone that should feel aggrieved from the Cavs, I think it's him.
Yeah, I forget who asked me this. It might have been you. I think it was Spencer German as well, friend of the program, Spencer German, who asked me this, like, how many All-Stars are the Cavs going to have? And I think I said one, and just because Donovan Mitchell felt like a lock because he wasn't going to catch Kyrie in the vote just in terms of Eastern Conference guards, but like had a firm hold on second place and was going to be locked in as a starter. But like I said, and the first segment, it's just, I agree. Like I wrote an article last week, I believe, just making the All-Star case for Darius Garland. It's just like he is putting up this pretty similar to pretty much the same numbers as last year, but you have to put it with the context that like it's with Donovan Mitchell as his co-star now, and like Mitchell's putting up better numbers than he was ever with the Jazz, which is still crazy to think about when you say it out loud. But I'm not surprised Jared Allen wasn't picked. I'm not surprised Evan Mobley wasn't picked. I am a little surprised Darius Garland wasn't picked. And like people can say like, oh, it's like Tyrese Halliburton, that makes sense. Jaylen Brown, that makes sense. Joel Embiid, that more than makes sense. Julius Randle, I think you can make an argument for that. I'm getting some of the like Trey or DeMar DeRozan was on the list. Like, yes, you can make a compelling argument for that too. Like, I have the names at the top of my head right now, and I can keep going down the list. Or Drew Holiday, like, yeah, that one was a little sus, I think, but like Drew Holiday's also just really freaking good, and I think deserves a lot of the credit. And I know like people say like, oh, it's just a glorified scrimmage at the end of the day, like there's no defense play, but like for these guys, it's a point of pride. I think like it's something that like you can say like, listen, I am considered the best at my position amongst my peers. And like, there's always going to be the debate like, oh, expand it to 15 players for each roster, or like JB Bickerstaff said, because the league is so positionless at this point, it shouldn't be like by position. It should just be like the top 15 vote getters. Like, you can make a lot of arguments for it. And I think just Darius had the most solid case out of anyone not named Donovan Mitchell. And you did a good job making a case for all three of those guys on the solo show the other day. But I'm just not surprised, because you can talk about other stumps. Like Jimmy Butler didn't get in. James Harden didn't get in. Jalen Brunson didn't get in.
Would you expand it to 15? Is that's kind of the follow up here?
I would. I mean, again, it's a point of pride because you're saying like I'm the best. I mean, if it's 15 and like they go positionless, you can say like I'm one of the best 15 players in my conference. Like, that's a big bragging rights thing at the end of the day. And I think I would expand it. I think it makes it more fun for the fans. I think it makes it more fun for the game in general, just because, yeah, at the end of the day, it is a glorified scrimmage. I know the Elam format makes it more exciting at the end of the day, especially in the fourth quarter. Like, that's All-Star in Cleveland last year. Like, the fourth quarter of that game was some of the most fun basketball I've ever watched, because it's so high stakes and you're watching literally the best of their best go blow for blow with one another, because it is for charity at the end of the day, but it's fun. So yeah, I would expand it just because I think it just adds more depth to it. But I do think I'd also say like, let's just throw out the positions part of it, and it's like the top 15 people, period. Like, yeah, you can skew that a lot. So like, well, it's just a bunch of guards versus like a bunch of centers and forwards and stuff. But it's just, this league is so talented. I feel like you shouldn't put a cap on things and just maybe encourage a little bit of expansion somehow. What would you do?
I would go to 15. I think 15 is reasonable. JB Bickerstaff was asked about this post game, and he was like anti kind of 15, saying he's kind of an old school guy in the way. And I get that. I would just go 15. I don't really see the harm in it. I think it represents the expansion of the talent pool. Like, there's 15 All-NBA slots. Like, why don't we just 15 All-Stars from each conference? I don't really see a problem with it. There's probably some changes that could be made in the voting as well. You know, it's like all on the coaches for the reserves. Like, I wonder if there's just a different way to do it or something. I don't exactly know. I think there's probably some tweaks you can make to this, but I think you could tweak everything to some degree and make it better. But like 50, like 15, like, but even, and I will say, even if you did expand to 15, you are still going to have situations where like there's a 16th guy who feels aggrieved. Like, I expanded this to 15, and let's say Harden, Garland, and you know, Brunson make it,
or Siakam,
like, you're going to have like a Siakam or a Jimmy Butler, or like someone who's still aggrieved. Like, you're going to have a lot of deserving guys. So this is always going to kind of be I think, inherently a problem, and I do get that. But Evan, let's end on this. Chris Haynes and Mark Stein on their new show, hashtag This League, talked about Cam Reddish, talked about him in relation to Dallas and Cleveland. Cleveland, Haynes said on the show, was kind of the most place he could kind of see it going. We talked about this a while ago. We have a whole segment on it. I still do not like see this as a thing that I would view as like a real worthwhile thing for the Cavs. He would be an expiring contract. He hasn't really been like a productive NBA player. If you took the former top 10 pick off of his resume, he doesn't look, I think, nearly as attractive. I get that he's 6'8". I get that there's physical things that are really interesting as a rehabilitation project. But if you're looking at what could be a rental for right now, I don't think he's better than the wings the Cavs are playing. So I don't really get this if that's the move they're going to make. Unless it's just like bring him in-house, we'll re-sign him, we're going to use this to turn over our wing room and we believe in him in that way. Mm-hmm. I get it. But it's not something, it's not a trade that I think helps you. Now, not that every trade should have to help you right now, but I think just considering the contract stuff, this is just feels like a weird one to me.
It does feel odd. I mentioned this morning after just like a few people just brought it my way, because if you know, I don't really listen to sports podcasts, but I listened to the segment itself and I'm just like, it makes sense. Like, there was some pre-draft interest on Cleveland's side of things just because Cam Reddish as a prospect like has a lot of the physical tools and showed at least flashes in high school and Duke, or at least in high school and his time in Duke, like makes sense of like the intrigue there. And maybe if you're Cleveland, you can believe you can extract that. Sure, why not? But like Chris said, I just don't know if you're the Cavs as a team who has a flawed roster to begin with, who is asset limited, who is bumping right up against a luxury tax threshold. I don't think a reclamation project or maybe like a recovery project like Cam Reddish, as Chris mentioned, is going to be a free agent this summer is really going to be worth it. But let's say, because I think Stein and Haynes also mentioned, just like it's like Cam Reddish wouldn't be their only move at the end of the day. Like, they would try to make like a more tangible move and then maybe take a swing at Cam Reddish as well. Like, if that's the case, like, yeah, I think you can justify that, especially if you think you can bring Cam Reddish back and you continue to develop him and grow him within your system. I have quiet concerns just about like a cultural aspect thing. Like, is he a toxic locker room guy, or does Cleveland believe like, hey, is our culture just rock solid enough that we know that one guy can't completely rock the boat enough to ruin it? Or there's some quiet red flags for me. Like, he flamed out in Atlanta because of reasons that were within and without his out of his control. There was reasons in New York he flamed out that were a lot of within his control. And I told you, like, I had a friend put a bug in my ear just about how like Cam Reddish seems like a guy who was a top five high school prospect and committed to Duke, and he was going to be the dude before Zion Williamson reclassified and RJ Barrett showed a lot of his chops too. But I think the intrigue will always be there because of that top five high school reel. I just think that ship is starting to sail. It's a guy who's just not a good 3-point shooter. Like, the defense and the playmaking's there, sure. But again, if like that's your only move for Cleveland, I just think you'd save your assets at that point. Maybe wait till the summer when things open up a little bit more, and maybe you can try and finagle a few more things as well, just pick wise or asset wise too.
Yeah. All right. Trade deadline's a week away, or a little under a week away. Interesting times abound for the Cleveland Cavaliers. This was a very, very interesting Thursday night.
It was nuts.
It was a that, in fact, it was. All in all, Cavs win. Garland's great. The whole Mitchell Brooks thing was certainly memorable. We'll talk about a ton more come Monday. Cavs play the Pacers next on Sunday, so we'll recap that game, talk about any trades that comes up between now and then on the Monday show. Until then, have a great weekend. I'm Chris. That's Evan. Thanks again to Jake Stevens. Be well.